So I'm going to call this Personal Application Illustrated, Learning About a Clear Conscience. If I could make this personal in some way, to think that you received a letter from a man that you knew, perhaps knew him as a person who was successful in the ministry, that the church was doing well and growing, and he says, but I wanted to tell you how God brought me here. He shared this for publication so that you and I can learn from it. So one pastor took this material we've been talking about and began to apply it to his own life, and he tells us his experiences. Here's the quote. I thought a clear conscience was the least of my worries until I was involved in learning this material. I had never cheated on a test or a reading assignment, not since high school anyway. I lived a clean life, even through my teen years. Since age 12, I have visualized myself in the ministry and have eagerly and conscientiously tried to know God's perfect will for my life. God has given me a perfectly wonderful wife, and we have made a happy adjustment in our married life. I wasn't aware of conflicts with anyone. Well, anyone except my mother. For 10 years, I have struggled to resolve my conflicts with her. I had come to the place where I had resigned myself to these conflicts and was trying to make the most of a bad situation. I told myself, this is just my thorn in the flesh, I guess. Nothing I do will please my mother. I cannot do anything right. She doesn't seem to appreciate the fact that I am in the ministry. In fact, she's been very critical and cutting in some of her remarks. These things hurt. My letter of apology didn't work. One time in Bible school, I felt very convicted about the unhappiness that existed. I wrote a letter of apology, but she mailed it to my brothers and sisters to try to shame them into doing the same. This upset me very much. I felt that I had been wrong, that my apology had not been accepted. Mother came to all my graduations and to my wedding. Each time there was an unhappy scene, a furious verbal battle, and icy tension. Efforts to please her were misunderstood. All of these events had this dark cloud hovering somewhere on the horizon. I tried very hard to do the right thing, the Christ-like thing. Somehow, I just couldn't avoid getting involved in an argument and saying things for which I was sorry. I kept asking myself why this was happening. How did I get involved? Why did I say what I said, what I did? When will I ever learn to keep quiet? Why do I always feel I have to justify myself? I resented my mother's advice. My years in Bible school did not help improve the situation. My mother had resisted my going to Bible school in the first place. She argued that I should get an education that would give me a job if I failed in the ministry. I resented her advice. I had received my call from God. If I remained in God's will, there would be no such thing as failure. All the circumstances that led in the direction of Bible school were clearly the leading of God. I announced that I would leave home immediately if she so desired. I was determined to go to Bible school, even if it meant she would disown me. I remember a missionary speaker who visited our church who said that she had to leave her home for the cause of Christ, never to return again. I could do it too. I was willing to pay any price to be in God's perfect will. The Bible school counseling routine revolved around the usual concerns, the academic, the social, the spiritual, the financial. In my senior year, I felt greatly depressed about my family relationship and about my failure in the letter of apology. My wife has to get up and dance just ever so often, so she... No. One counseling dean advised me against going home that summer if I expected to continue my schooling. Find that button, yeah. My nervous condition was at an all-time low. I could hardly drink a glass of water without spilling it. My shaking hands were a real embarrassment to me. A second dean advised me to get a job working with my hands for a year or so before continuing my schooling. You know, you're a nervous wreck. However, college did seem to be God's best for me that fall. I spent the next 3 years in a small liberal arts college in a quiet Midwestern town where my nervous condition improved greatly. I got involved in the program and activities of a local church, and in that accepting atmosphere of that community of believers, I found myself in many ways. I dated occasionally, but I was more concerned to get the most out of my studies. You come this way only once, I reasoned. After completing my college work, I felt led to continue my education in seminary. A counseling course there did help me to increase my self-awareness. The concept of God's unconditional acceptance struck a responsive chord in my hungry heart. Following graduation from seminary, I felt led of God to accept the pastorate of a small city church. I joined a group of local ministers in a weekly fellowship. In our first year together, we took a personality analysis test that included the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory and the Draw a Person test. I guess testing your artwork, I'm not sure. I had repressed my resentment. My first test revealed the following. You appear to have repressed some of your deeper feelings and are thus consciously unaware of some of them. Your early environment undoubtedly contributed to this, and you need feel no sense of guilt or inadequacy. However, you should try to discover your deep inner feeling, for they are a most important part of you. Sounds like a psychology test. Subsequent tests also pointed to this problem of the deeper feelings. The group discussion did help me to become aware and give voice to my frustration, but somehow the insight I needed to give me victory eluded my grasp. My spiritual and emotional strength was being drained. Throughout my ministerial preparation and in the minister's fellowship, I tried to find a solution to the thing that was draining my spiritual and emotional strength. My tests told me your feelings and thinkings are not working harmoniously. My devotional and prayer life were at a standstill. Through the years, I made a nuisance of myself with my friends by giving my detailed descriptions of my frustrations and unhappiness toward my family difficulties. They listened politely and felt sorry for me. Our minister's fellowship encouraged us to take a counseling course that included this material. During this course, we discussed the way to resolve conflicts with members of our families. Several new concepts were presented. I began to see my mother as a tool in God's hands. In God's hands, not the devil. That's the big difference here. It was most helpful to picture each Christian as an uncut jewel and our parents as God's tools to chip off the rough edges so that the finest facets of the jewel might become visible. God knew I needed my family to chip off the rough edges of my personality. The idea that I needed to acknowledge to my mother that I had had a wrong attitude toward her and that I needed to ask her for forgiveness for this was not yet an easy pill to swallow. My pride had blinded me to my own wrong. I had justified myself by feeling that my mother was mostly wrong. The concept of God's chain of command made sense, and it made me uncomfortable too. Chain of command then is that we take our rule from God, but he has given us the chain of command. He's given the authorities over us his right to command. So we are obeying him when we obey the authorities over us. Children should be obeying their parents because God gave parents for that purpose. So you had to sit back and think, could I honestly thank God for my mother? All the thoughts of the problems through the years kept popping up. Could I actually thank God for my mother? I reflected on my bitterness and unforgiving attitude toward my mother. could I honestly thank God for all that I resented in my mother? Where that chisel hit my jewel facets, could I thank God for that? The very thing that irritated me, you see. After all, I'm not the only one who has trouble getting along with her. Desperately, I tried to salvage some justification for my behavior toward my mother. Finally, I surrendered and said, I thank you, Lord. Please forgive my ingratitude. Next came the bitterest pill of all. I must seek the forgiveness of my mother. I was talking to a fellow that was having a terrible problem with life. And I said, well, it all points back to this pastor that you disliked, and he took, he was studying at a high school run by the church. And because he did this or didn't do that, the pastor said, well, you don't get a graduation certificate. And he was so mad about that, he didn't even try to work it out. So then he said, well, I'll just go to the Army. Well, they wouldn't let him in because he didn't have the high school certificate. And I said, it comes down to this, that to settle things, you're going to have to go back to him and ask for forgiveness for your attitude toward him. And he basically picked up his stuff and said goodbye. He was not willing to do this. But at this point, this man recognized it. How should I do it? What would I say? I had apologized before and it had failed. She was 2,000 miles away. Should I make a phone call? That, at the time, would be very expensive. Do you remember that? When calling around was very expensive. One rationalization after another still left me without an honest answer. She would not accept my apology. I was sure of that. I began the painful process of asking forgiveness. That afternoon, I shared one of my mother's recent letters with my counseling teacher in an attempt to identify the basic wrongs I had committed against her. What was it that she was holding against me? He could see in it some of the unhappiness she felt toward me and other members of my family. Very carefully, we examined and identified the basic wrongs together. There was ingratitude. You weren't showing gratitude for what parents had done for you, what they had provided for you. You weren't showing gratitude. Rejection of parental authority. I know better. God has called me. See? Pride. Disrespect. And a failure to love as I ought. Treating her lovingly. Here, in a matter of 2 or 3 hours, my entire lifetime was opened up before me. He began to see himself as she saw him. I could see that my first apology attempt did not hit the basic wrong. That's like somebody who shot you in the leg saying, I'm sorry I didn't say hi yesterday. You know. Well, that's nothing. You have to get to the basic wrong as they would see it. Where was I? I could see. Okay. Then to my approach toward her must reflect humility, free from any hint that I was wrong, but you were too. None of that pointing when you're trying to ask for forgiveness. Just me. My heart was heavy for several days as I prayed and thought through the entire matter. Now, this is an important part that he grasped here. I worked out what I was going to say. He wasn't going to leave it for the moment, you see. I wrote it out on paper, complete with pauses. I'm going to wait here, let that sink in. Then I called my mother long distance. after itemizing each basic offense to mother. I said, "Mother," three Derek, difficult words, "I was wrong. Will you forgive me?" My mother was so surprised, she hardly knew what to say. I was not sure that she understood, so I repeated the question, "Will you forgive me?" To this day, I can remember her saying, "Yes." However, after the phone call, I was still not completely at peace. What if she wrote to my brothers and sisters and told them? What would they think? Would they understand? One call led to several. At our next minister's meeting, I shared my experience and my dilemma with my counseling teacher. We discussed the possible feelings of my brothers and sisters toward me. I could see now how my attitude toward my mother had hurt my testimony as a minister of Jesus Christ. I did not deserve their respect. All day long, I wrestled with my teacher's prescription, a series of phone calls. I've got to talk to all of them. I've got to ask each of their forgiveness. Wherein had I wronged them? Had I identified the basic wrong? Was my attitude right? Was the time right? There are some times when the Lord starts working on us, but our offense is just too fresh in the mind of somebody else, and they don't even want to talk to us, much less ask, give us forgiveness. Sometimes you have to wait. I made the series of calls. When I talked to the brother who lived nearest my mother, I inquired about her welfare. His answer came as a thrilling report. Brother said, "I don't know what you did. I have never seen her happier in her life. Usually I hear a constant flow of complaints about her health. All day Saturday while I was there, she never offered one complaint. She said you would ask for her forgiveness. This was an answer to prayer. You don't know what this means to me," the brother said. What a relief. I fully expected to receive a letter from my mother reflecting all the former unhappiness she felt for me. It was not unusual to receive a 10 or 12 page letter within a couple of days after she had received a letter from me or talked to me. The 10 page letter did not come. In fact, it was 2 weeks before I heard from her at all. When she finally did write, her 2-page letter was completely free of bitterness and unhappiness. That weight that he had carried all this time had just dissolved, you see. This bearing of a guilty conscience that he had buried, that was the feelings that he had hidden, that he was wrong and he had not admitted it. And now it was all undone. As hard as it was for him to get there, it was absolutely worth it. This experience became a new beginning for me. All my brothers and sisters assured me of their forgiveness. My heart was and is overflowing with the joy akin to the new birth. I enjoy a new sense of God's presence, a new awareness of a clear conscience, a new capacity to love. You don't really love until you sense how they feel, how what you did that hurt them, how it damaged them. A new capacity to love and a new sense of purpose. I thank God for this new light that I have received. I was the big brother, 2 younger brothers. We were 3 years apart. And when I came to all of this, I had to go back, think of how I lorded over them. I was physically bigger, physically stronger for most of our growing up time. I remember one time my one brother was whining, complaining, saying, I don't want to do this, and whatever we were doing, we're walking along. I just got so mad at him, I just reached up and I punched him on the face, and he just kind of collapsed, not down on the sidewalk, but just kind of withdrew within himself, wept silently. And how that came back to me, how could I do that to my little brother? How could I think of myself where that was excusable? And I had to go. I went to my mother and asked for forgiveness. I went to my brothers, each of the brothers, and asked them for forgiveness. And admitting that I was wrong, that I understood that now, and asked if they would forgive me. And like this fellow, I found that somehow God worked in their hearts, and they forgave me, and it just opened up a new way of thinking for me. So you say, this is pretty tough stuff, Pastor, and it is, because this is a little different. Hey, come on out for soul winning, you know? This is a little different than this. This is that inward development. This is where you actually school yourself to think of how you have wronged others and why that's so wrong. This is when the Bible comes to life for you and sin becomes exceedingly sinful. When we say, I know I did that, but that's not very bad. This is just excusing it. This is justifying self. So sit down with yourself and with God, and as he did, write out how you think that should be worded. What are the basic wrongs? What do they perceive as the basic wrongs? How do they see what you've done? And then ask the question, will you forgive me? Let's bow for prayer. Father, you have shown us how important a clear conscience is. And as this pastor who is pastoring, trying to do the work, he found that his spirit was so troubled by his soul damage that he was not being effective. He was tied up with an inner conflict that did not allow him to truly open the scriptures to others. I thank you that you have shown us how to do this and encouraged us to do it. Recognize that perhaps about us there are people that could be a help to our life that are resisting because they see we are a proud person who won't ask for forgiveness. Especially for our prideful acts, our boasting talk. Everybody can see that except us. Everybody can resent that but us. I ask, Father, you might help us to see that if we never understand what we should ask forgiveness for, we should go to pride and think it through that way. Would you take each person that hears this message and help them to ask the question, how could my life be better? How could my Christian life be closer to Christ if I just cleared my conscience? If I could ask forgiveness to the people that have been closest to me? With heads bowed, eyes closed, do you feel tonight that maybe this is something you need to do? Is this something that you've put off because it's so difficult? It's emotionally touching. Let me ask you, are you willing to turn this over to the Lord? Are you willing to rest in his wisdom and just ask for forgiveness? If you say, that's where I need to be, pray for me. Would you slip your hand up? Let me know. Let me know if I can pray for you. Father, you have touched our hearts with this wonderful story, true story of a man who was able to develop the goal of his life to serve you in the gospel ministry, but he had to get himself out of the way. But the way to do that was the emotionally challenging demeaning of self and asking for forgiveness. We said this morning, Father, that we should rejoice to be a nobody, and yet we so desperately hold on to being somebody that has self-respect and won't tolerate disrespect that we end up focusing on self. I ask that you might help us to set that aside, even as Christ did, to take the burden of others upon ourselves, to love as he has loved. And we pray these things in Jesus' name.